All right, we're back here at Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers on WDCB 90.9 FM. And the crowd is filing in here on a Tuesday night at Katerina's, 1920 West Irving Park Road here in Chicago. Of course, you can also hear a complete podcast of the show on chicagojazz.com. We've got even more of the interviews and more of the music, so be sure to check that out. It's very simple to find right on the homepage of chicagojazz.com. Just look for the smiling face of Mike Jeffers, and it'll take you right to the podcast. It's very blatant, very obvious, and very ridiculous, but it is what it is. So I am glad you can make it down here. I'm sitting here with Alfonso Ponticelli, and I'm glad you made it down because I wanted to talk about the Gypsy Jazz Festival you have coming up here on starting, what, October?
Yeah, the first week of October.
So it's the entire week.
Well, it starts on Wednesday. Some of the artists will be coming in earlier that week for rehearsal, and going to be running through, yeah, the week. We're going to do a warm-up at the Green Mill, have
okay.
some of the artists sit in with us there, and play throughout the week, Thursday at Katerina's. And
what are the exact dates on all that stuff? So that
it's going to be the 3rd of October at Katerina's, and there'll be a movie showing of L'Atrodrome, and then there will be a concert with some artists from Germany and France.
Okay.
And then at the Green Mill on the weekend, Friday and Saturday, two concerts.
So the 4th and the 5th.
Yes.
4th and the 5th of October at the Green Mill, and the 3rd here at Katerina's.
Yes.
And that, first off, because she was telling me a little bit about, before we got on the air, about the movie.
Yes.
Now, that's basically what that is the journey of the gypsies, is what she said.
Yes, the journey of the gypsy Roma people from India, northern India, through Turkey and all the way through, eventuating in the Balkans and in France and Spain. It's the journey of the gypsies as they traveled in music. So
okay.
there's not much spoken word per se.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about gypsy jazz because, I mean, I've obviously heard a lot about gypsy jazz, but, of course, I own a jazz magazine. So for the people that don't know exactly
sure.
what the difference is of gypsy jazz as opposed to other jazz,
yeah.
what's the background of gypsy jazz?
I would say that the fusion of gypsy music and the Roma people, the gypsy music in Eastern Europe and in France and Belgium when Django was coming around, fused with the music of like Louis Armstrong and the early jazz and the Hot Five. That's where they get the Hot Club of France. It was actually a club in France, and there's musicians that were involved in this club. And they called it the Quintet of the Hot Club of France because they were five musicians that were from this club, you know, kind of like if we were a quintet from the Katerina's of Chicago or something, you know. So this is where the music kind of evolved. There was this fusion of the it would be an interpretation, basically, of American jazz from Django Reinhardt, specifically, and Stephan Crapelli and the Quintet of the Hot Club of France, and their take on it in the early 30s.
Okay.
So it's got a little bit of that folky sound in the early recordings, you know, very guitar-orientated and what they call the pump, the rhythm guitar.
That's what they call that. I mean, you hear it prominently in the music.
Yeah, le pump. Or it's more like string jazz. Some bands will call themselves string jazz, you know, in Europe. So this is where it kind of started, you know, out of this gypsy culture. And when Django heard Louis Armstrong, he cried and just said, "This is wonderful. I'm going to devote my life to this style of music." Before that, he was playing in the Bal Musette and, you know, in a lot of the music that's known in Paris. It was originally played on accordion, and before that, the zampogna, the bagpipe instrument from Italy.
Oh, okay.
And they, you know, you know, graciously put those instruments down and let the banjo and the accordion take over and became the Bal Musette, and people danced to that music. But then came the jazz and the records, and they started listening and interpreting those early recordings and started doing their interpretations in Europe of the American jazz.
Okay.
And Then in later, the artists Django and Stefan and other musicians that were playing.
As Django Reinhardt.
Django Reinhardt, yeah. Jean-Baptiste Reinhardt. He would interpret these records, you know, early Louis Armstrong recordings, and they come up with their own style. And you listen to the 30s, and you hear how they changed in the late 30s and then the 40s, and he recorded into the 50s, and you start hearing the style changing into bebop, you know, and he had clarinet, saxophone, piano, drums, you know. So it's all considered
still like evolving. It's slowly evolving.
Yeah, like any artist, you know, you have a period where you're painting like a painter in one way, and then you have your period of painting another way, like Van Gogh or Picasso, anyone, you know. He was an artist in that way, and eventually actually got into painting and art, you know.
Oh, really?
So
he's developing all this. How did it make it to the States?
It came over here. Actually, he came to the United States to perform with Duke Ellington.
Okay.
And Duke Ellington invited him to play at, they did a whole tour of the whole States. They went all over. And he wrote letters back home to Stefan, you know, those letters are still there. And people knew of him before he came here from the records.
Mm-hmm.
They would get the discs, actually, Les Paul. Heard that Django was in the States, and I think the story goes he gave like a half of a $100 bill to a taxi driver to go get him, you know? So they finally found him, and Les Paul bought an amplifier, Django bought that amplifier, you know? They were very similar time. I think Les Paul actually bought his gravestone, I think. There was some stories. I think he even has Django's guitar. You know?
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were great
friends.
They were
real friends,
yeah. When he went to France to see Django, you know, they met up, you know. So there was the post-war period where there was a lot of meetings, you know.
Right, yeah. Dizzy
Gillespie, Louis Armstrong, they met up with Django, so I'm sure there was a lot of late-night jamming going on all over the place, you know, for learning.
Well, that had to be quite a scene, too, because, I mean, you're talking about his own style, Django's own style, and now he's playing with the people that he was emulating and copying.
It's really cool. It's amazing the fact that you have this American band like Duke Ellington, who's like defined jazz, like Count Basie, and all these musicians that came out of there, Lester Young and such. And then you have this European musician who's not grown up with the, you know, from a youth listening to, you know, Lester Young and Count Basie. He's interpreting their music, our music, American music, let's say. And then he's taking it, and now, years later, we're in America reinterpreting the interpretation from a gypsy's perspective. And now there's bands like my band, Swing Gitan, and other European or American bands, and they're reinterpreting the music that kind of was American. Well, it was American, really.
There's,
it was foreign.
You guys are reinterpreting the French version of the American version.
Yeah, so it's going back and forth
you
now.
Can follow that.
Next generation, right?
Yeah.
Which is a lot easier now with the YouTube and CDs and the way music is shared. So it's a little less, I guess you'd call it free or open. It's a little less restricted to geographical places, where before there were so many artists who, okay, I live in this area, so I play like this Alabama-style guitar player, Delta blues player, or you name it, you know, or gypsy from Paris. So
yeah, because it's opened everything up. I mean, people can see anything.
So once the discs came over to Europe, they just really just got that style, figured it out, and interpreted it. So they interpreted it, you know, their own way.
Yeah.
So from the filters of their own upbringing, see?
Yeah.
So it gave it that folky sound. And it's a lot of, I don't know, almost sounds like bluegrass, some of the early music. Very square and some, not square, like groove-wise, but the rhythm. It's like a...
It's more straight, almost.
It's kind of like how the early, you know, bass and drums, you know, are playing. That's what the rhythm guitar is playing, so...
Okay. How did you suddenly get this bat? Now, where did you grow up?
I grew up here in the Midwest here in in Chicago area, and I've been playing guitar and been around music my whole life, you know, just from the family being musicians and but I played guitar. So, of course, you're going to look for as a guitarist, those people that started, you know, the guitar. So flamenco was kind of my initial inspiration, looking into that, the roots of the guitar. When I was in high school, early high school, I started really getting into the flamenco, listening to different styles. And then realizing, you know, the roots of jazz guitar being Django Reinhardt. You can't go back to Eddie Lang, you know, Joe Venuti, who inspired Django and Stefan. But I got into that style of music just studying Charlie Christian, Tal Farlow, Jimmy Rainey, Barney Kessel. I went to see Barney Kessel play. So many players come through Chicago in the 70s and 80s. And I was lucky enough to see those guys. So once you hear it, you're hooked. It's great. It's the best. It's the roots, you know?
Right.
Like if a singer's going to look for a jazz singer, you're going to go to, you know, the roots of jazz singing. Cheryl, you know, Bebop, Betty Carter, Sarah Vaughan. You're going to look for these players, singers. So, and you can go back no further, really. And what's really awesome about Chicago is that we have, playing in our band, how many people could say that we have in the band people that have played with the people that inspired Django Reinhardt and Stefan Grappelli? Joe Venuti was a violin player that our bass player John Bainey recorded with his last CD.
Sure.
Our cymbalum player knew and hung out many hours with Joe Venuti. So we have this opportunity, you know, Steve Gibbons and myself were able to meet with Django Reinhardt's son in France and camp with him, you know. So as the years go on, these people become you know, more rare. So it's wonderful that we have, you know,
you have this direct crop connection.
Sure. What about Rusty Jones in Chicago? I mean, people say, "Oh, I see you in my dreams." Isn't that a great solo or a great song? Mm-hmm. It had to be you, or "No, There's No Greater Love." Or they say, "Oh, there's Rusty Jones. His great uncle wrote that." You know,
right?
Says, "Wow."
Right.
You know, this is a great city to be in and learning jazz and, you know.
It is.
Sharing it.
Well, so you're the name of your group. Now, when did you start it? Swing
Gitan. Yeah. It's because it's gypsy in French, Gitan. In Italian, it's zingare, and in Spanish, it'd be gitano. So it's our take on the French gypsy swing, incorporating some of what we do, which is the American interpretation
of it.
And our violin player, Steve Gibbons, who is wonderful at the Balkan music, and he leads a band, the Gypsy Rhythm Project, and he brings what he has, you know, to the table with that. And so we, with the late, great Tony Balog, on this last CD, we did the Sweet Home CD in 2010, Hungarian Roma, and as his, as Alex Udvari is as well. It's just great. It's great that we had them in Chicago, you know, to rub elbows
with. Well, and you guys perform here at Cod Arenas once a month.
Yeah. 10 years.
For 10 years. Now, what is it? It's what night every month?
Because it's the second Friday of the month.
Second Friday of the month here at
Cod
Arenas.
Second Friday.
And then, of course, you're at the Green Mill every Wednesday
every
night.
Every Wednesday at the Green Mill.
From 9 to 1?
Yes.
9 to 1 every Wednesday at the Green Mill. And you've been there for a while, too.
And we've been there about, was it 9 years? Yeah.
Wow, 9 years.
Well, we
already
got a start here at Katarina's, actually, right here. She gave us a start. She was the one that really had faith in us and said, let's do it. Let's do like an every Tuesday thing. And so we were, you know, I was training my rhythm guitar players for like 5, 6, 7 years. Finally, they get to be a point, you know, where they could play. And, of course, my Carter O'Brien, my guitar player, falls off his bike and breaks his wrist.
Oh.
I said, come on, I can do all I can, but, you know, don't fall off your bike and break your wrist. So another student of mine came back to Chicago, John Eichley, and he started and took his spot until Carter got better. Then they both started playing with me. And I took both those students and Steve Gibbons on violin and Louis Marini on bass, and we all went to the Django Reinhardt Festival in France, and we performed at Saint-Moi-sur-Seine.
Oh, no kidding.
It was great. I brought my wife, and we just had a great time. Stayed in Europe and traveled around. And
wow. When was this?
It was 2004.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that was,
But that really kind of kicked the band off, probably,
it really
by
helped.
Doing that.
Yeah, it did. That was a great year to be at that festival. It's gotten bigger. The internet's come on since then, you know. Everyone knows about it.
Yeah.
It's no longer this quiet, you know, thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we take a listen to a track off of your recording, Sweet Home,
Sure.
And this is going to be called the Moldovani. Let's
play Mama Mama.
Mama Mama.
Yeah,
Mama,
this is a great traditional song that we feature the late, great Mr. Tony Balog on.
Okay. Well, let's take a listen to that here on Chicago Jazz Revealed, 90.9 FM, WDCB, and ChicagoJazz.com. Back here at Chicago Jazz Revealed, here live at Katerina's. I'm Mike Jeffers, and we are live at Katerina's, but this is also on WDCB 90.9 FM and Chicago Jazz. It's all right to clap. It's all right to drink. Wow, the crowd's getting really rowdy now. Wow, that took the wind out of me. Okay, I'm back. So we're here with Alfonso Ponticelli, and we are going to talk a little bit. We just heard a lot about his background and about the background of Gypsy Jazz, and you created a festival around Gypsy Jazz called, is it the Chicago Gypsy Jazz Festival?
Yeah, there's so many fests around the country. There's the Django Fest. It happens out in Seattle and out west. There's... So we open it up and keep it Chicago-based and call it the Chicago Gypsy Jazz Festival. So we have in the past, well, it's been 11 years. We have had so many different bands play from, Kruno Spisek to the Hot Club of Detroit to Stefan Rembel and Tim Kliphaus from Holland and Pigal 44.
Jeez. And you put this whole thing together.
Yeah,
you're bringing all these people in.
Brought musicians from Germany, from the States. You know, Gonzalo Bergara, who's living on the West Coast, and Adrien Moignard and Benoit Convert and the band Zaiti. So I was fortunate to go to France to the Django Reinhardt Festival I've been there 6 times. I was just there last year, and looking for people, you know,
sure,
that are face to face, like we're meeting today. You call me up, so let's do an interview, and here I am. You know, it's not on the phone. You don't know exactly who you're meeting if it's like that. So I went there and I met up with my good friend T.T. Baumberger, who is going to be in Chicago for the 11th annual Chicago Gypsy Jazz Festival. He's the one on our documentary DVD. He's the gypsy that has been playing his music for so long and has inspired me, and was the one that would keep me up till 4 or 5 in the morning until the sun came up, and we'd be playing different versions of these songs over and over again. And so I said, T.T., you're great. I'm going to bring you to Chicago, man. He plays rhythm guitar and he sings, and he's just wonderful. He's just a wonderful musician and performer. He picks me up in his van. Alfonso, get in the van. Let's go. Next thing I know, I'm in the countryside in some huge mansion, you know, for with a barbecue. And, you know. So he's...
those are the kind of friends you need to have.
Yeah, those are...
yeah.
Exactly. Well, friends like that, you don't need... Well, you do need friends, yeah.
You do. That's right.
You know, it's great. It's great. Yeah, so he's wonderful. So I whenever I'm there, I see him, and he's hospitable. And he's got his caravan.
So you're bringing him over.
Bringing him over. And so the fest started like that, like, you know, meeting these other musicians in the campgrounds in France. And so we try to bring one European artist every year, or someone that's not here every week. I can't have my band play the festival. We play every week, okay? But the festival is on the weekend, so those locals that don't have a chance to see the band, this is an opportunity to
That's what I was going to say. That's the nice thing, is that you're on Wednesdays usually, but this is actually on the weekend at the Green Mill. Katarina's on Thursday.
And we're not typically here on Thursdays, so for those who like to come to Katarina's, some prefer to come here to see us here better than any place. This is a great time during the week to see us.
Mm-hmm.
And with some other artists, you know, from Europe. And so the festival was originally designed to make, you know, Chicago a gypsy jazz center, where people would think of the city and think, oh, that's a place that has a festival once a year, or there's people that want to come to the city, you know. But I'm just a musician.
Right.
I mean, fundamentally, I'm not like a guy with a. I don't own like any business like that's gonna that you know, this is a write off or something. You know, it's not like that. I just do this on a shoestring, and you know, and in the past I've had time to organize, you know, the festival and incorporate, you know, Katarina's and the
Allianz. You have sponsors?
Allianz,
or this is just doing this on your own?
Like Katarina would help us, you know, and the Green Mill would help us, and sponsors like the Old Town School of Folk Music, the music store in the past, they've pitched in. I would do a poster and say, hey, if you want to, you know, I have a graphic designer who's going to put your logo on the poster, and we'd call a couple of different guitar companies.
Sure.
Adele Arte Guitars, and we would have... DR Strings. They would, you know, some different people that are on the scene that wanted to help out. My good friend Lito, who I wrote a song after, the song entitled Lito's Place, I think we might play later. He has helped out with his. Well, he's recorded us. He's recorded 2 CDs with us, and it was really great to have these local people, you know, either sponsors or local people. In the past, this fest has been bigger. Sometimes it's smaller, you know, depending on the year and what's happening. You know, if I'm having a kid that year, it might not be a huge fest, you know. You know, so, you know, then the next year you have another kid, so maybe that fest also won't be as big. So lately things are getting a little bigger because the kids are getting bigger. You know, so, you know, we have more time to do things, right? You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And, yeah, so it's.
I never thought of it that way, but that's a. That's
brings new meaning to the word homegrown.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So yeah, we're keeping it like that. The kids are playing music too. We just came back from the Madison Festival that they have. It's called the Midwest Gypsy Swing Fest, and they've been doing that there every year, also for 11 years. And Sims and his wife Maggie have a band called Harmonious Whale. And they're like our brothers and sisters over there, because they do the same thing we do. They have a huge barn. It's out on a horse farm where they board horses.
Oh,
very
yeah.
gypsy, big campfire. We're in a 100-year-old barn with people sitting on hay bales and listening like you can't believe, like the best audience you've ever had in your life.
That's where they have the fest. That's
it's just so wonderful. So we go there every year. We just got back last weekend, and they bring acts in from. Just like I do, you know. And so this is how the festival developed, and the festival is happening this time of year because the festival in Seattle that Nick Lear puts on, the Django Fest, is the middle of September.
Right, you've got to coordinate them.
Yeah,
all,
so
right?
We talk once in a while. Okay, who are you bringing over? Oh, we have Robin Nolan. Okay, so last year it's like, okay, maybe Robin Nolan can stop off in Chicago on his way back out across
right.
the pond, you know, back
right.
over to Holland. So we help the artists. They help us, and, you know, the
yeah.
festival coordinators or musicians like me, you know, make it a little easier sometimes. And
that's
so,
great.
Yeah, and sometimes there's been workshops and jam sessions organized, and we're always inviting people to help if they have ideas or venues they want to offer or anything. You know, we basically need five things. We need advertising, which is this is that, you know,
mm-hmm.
and places to stay for the artists, which we provide. And we also need the venues, which we have for Caterina's.
Sure.
And we need volunteers, people to help out, either pick someone up, or that's usually me, or some other people that we have. And, you know, you need the artists. You need to have
right.
the right ingredients.
Well, it sounds like it's a big community across, you know, both continents there. It's,
yeah.
I mean, you know, everybody knows everybody. Everybody's kind of
and,
like...
And it's a small community.
Right.
Even though it is a large number, and if you take it into the... perspective, you see that, like, jazz is huge. Even jazz is, you know, not the largest segment of music, you know, like popular
right.
wise, but it's folk jazz. It's like, and it's gypsy jazz. So it's,
mm-hmm.
it's a small group. So everyone does seem to know each other that way.
Yeah.
You know? Which is nice in a way, you know, it's not like you're a small fish.
Well, that's,
you know,
that's the way
always.
All of these small things. I mean, that's the way everything works out is it works out so that it's a success is because nobody's trying to undercut the other person. Everybody's
yeah.
working together in order for everybody to
yeah,
to make a success.
Like there was this guitar player I just met this weekend in Madison. Actually, it's in Fitchburg, Wisconsin, but it's just outside Madison where the fest takes place. And Ali, I think is his first name, 22 years old, young kid.
Yeah.
Teaching workshops, traveling across the country. They're flying him here and there.
Wow.
He's been playing like 12 years, something like this. You know. So if you have the right environment, you know, it's okay. You're gonna be fine. So we try to create that with the festival once a year.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else wants to do a Gypsy Fest, you know, once a year or twice a year, you know,
right.
bring it on. That'd be great, you know.
Sure.
They do that. There used to be 40 clubs up and down Broadway, right, or whatever back
mm-hmm.
in the day. So yeah,
that's right.
It doesn't have to be one or two.
That's right.
So I would say that, yeah.
Well, so let's make sure everybody knows. So it's October 3rd here at Caterina's, 1920
yes.
West Irving Park Road.
Yes.
And then October 4th and 5th at the Green Mill, which is basically Lawrence and Broadway.
Yes.
4802.
Yes, 4802 North Broadway. Friday from 9 to 1, just like the time of the weekday performances. And then Saturday, 8 to midnight.
8 to midnight. And that's the Gypsy Jazz Fest. Now, they can get more information at gypsyjazz.us.
Yes.
So www.gypsyjazz.us for more information. And, well, why don't we close this out with one more tune by you and your group, Swing Gitan.
Yes.
I said it correctly, didn't I?
You got it.
Oh,
that's
boy.
It. Okay.
And what's the name of the tune we're going to hear? Lito's Place.
Lito's
right?
Place, dedicated to my friend Lito, yes.
Well, thanks for coming down.
Thank you.
I'm glad you made it. And hopefully all of our listeners make it out to the Gypsy Jazz Festival. And if you can't make the festival, definitely check out Alfonso and his group either at Caterina's the second
yeah.
Friday of
yeah.
the month.
And we will be having Pierre, I didn't mention, Pierre Camlot from France on guitar and Titi Bamberger on guitar and vocals, along with Alex Udvary and myself and Steve Gibbons and John
oh, wow.
Bainey. Yeah, with a special surprise artist from Germany coming along with TT, I just found out. So
and that's going to be at all three?
Yeah, yes.
On all three, October 3rd, 4th, and 5th. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, get more information, www.gypsyjazz.us, and let's take a listen to Lito's Place here by Alfonso Ponticelli and Swing Gitan here on WDCB 90.9 FM and ChicagoJazz.com. Support for WDCB and Chicago Jazz Revealed comes from the University of Chicago Presents, announcing its new series, Jazz at the Logan, at the Reva and David Logan Center for the Arts in Hyde Park. The season opens on October 25th with The Bad Plus and continues with Annette Cohen, Dick Hyman, Bill Charlap, and others. Single ticket and subscription information at chicagopresents.u, chicago.edu. All right, I'm back here at Chicago Jazz Revealed, here live at Katerina's. Oh, I'm Mike Jeffers. Thank you. Oh, yeah. And, of course, we're live here every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. till 8 p.m. at Katerina's, 1920 West Irving Park Road. Of course, she has live music here six nights a week. And more information at katerinas.com. This is an eclectic club, and that's why it really works out well to have this show live in front of a studio audience, mm-hmm. a restaurant audience, a club audience. And I'm happy to have on the show now Charlie Krebs, the cartoonist for Chicago Jazz Magazine. And Charlie and I used to have a radio show years ago, back in the old days of radio.
Yes, we did. Yep.
We had a show for about a year or so until mm-hmm. the Catholic station shut us off.
AM 950. This is Chicago Jazz.
Oh, look at that. He's
with Mike Jeffers.
Live.
Live. Live from Chicago.
Well, we're live here at Katerina's, and I'm glad you came on the show. I wanted to have
you. Thank
you. This actually works out great because I know you have a massive passion for jazz and music mm-hmm. of all sorts, blues, rock. The background that you have and the knowledge that you have on all of those different fronts.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it worked so well when we had the show, when it mm-hmm. was on the other station, because I knew I could bounce ideas off of you and bounce off different things about music to you. So before we get into all of the things you have happening, the art shows and all of that, have you been checking out any new artists? Are there new jazz musicians or even some blues musicians maybe that you've been able to go and see that are out on the scene?
You know, I've been listening to the show, and one of the shows I really enjoyed recently was Paul Marinaro, and I like what he's doing. I like what he's done with his new record, where he introduced some old acetate, some old vinyl
right.
that his father had created. You know, I think people from that generation, my mother made a record like that, and I have a friend whose mother made a record like that, and I think what Paul did, introducing or combining that old acetate of his father's with his new music, that was brilliant, and I think mm-hmm. what Paul's doing is very, very cool. On the blues scene, there's a old pal of mine, Taranzo Cannon.
Oh, sure, Taranzo.
He's made a big push this last year or two. He's on Delmark Records, and a long, long time ago when I'd see Taranzo at the Harlem Avenue Lounge, you've been there, and my friend Sean is here. He's been there on the open stage. Taranzo is an old veteran of the Harlem Avenue Lounge, but there was something about him where you kind of thought he was the pick to click. He was
right.
the guy who was...
He had that little extra something that you could
yeah,
tell.
Yeah, he had a little yeah. bit of showmanship, and he was the whole package. And so that's one that I would recommend. Taranzo Cannon's really doing some good work, and that's on Delmark, which is...
Sure.
Anything that comes out on Delmark is usually well worth checking out.
Bob Kester knows his music, that's for sure.
Yeah, he was a great guest. We were lucky to have him back
yeah,
then.
We just had him on the cover of Chicago Jazz Magazine just back in...
Right.
May, June,
yeah.
the Blues Fest,
yeah.
too. Gosh, yeah. everything flies so fast. We're already like in September.
Yeah, that was,
so that's
that was,
amazing.
It doesn't seem that long ago, but that was a great couple days at Blues Fest. And
mm-hmm.
we had all those artists in the booth. There again, Ronnie Baker Brooks came
right.
into our booth. Eddie Clearwater. These are guys who have been around for a while, but they're still making really good records.
Well, and you know, it's interesting, too, is with the blues guys, since we're talking about that, there's also that jazz connection, because when you talk to especially the older guys,
mm-hmm.
they all know all the jazz guys. I mean, they went back and forth back in the 50s
right.
and 60s and 70s. I mean, they would all kind of intermingled everything. I know Buddy Guy. I can remember Buddy Guy talking all about the different changes and stuff. I think he listened to Joe Pass, and he listened to all these different guys. And,
right.
And he has a love for jazz. Now, with you, you've incorporated jazz into your cartoons. I think maybe, I don't know, you tell me if I'm wrong, maybe it's because when you first started drawing with Chicago Jazz Magazine, it seemed like the obvious fit.
You know, it's interesting. When I look back to how this whole cartooning career of mine evolves, sometimes I think that I learned everything, or at least had all the influence I needed very early on. And this might sound funny, but in the mid-50s, and anyone who's around my age, and if they were a kid or a very young kid in the mid-50s into 60s, the Mickey Mouse Club was on. And then after the Mickey Mouse Club was American Bandstand. And I think that kind of covered the cartooning and the music for me all at once. And as I went along, like most kids, drawing from those kinds of cartoons to comic strips to comic books. And then I think every young man, every boy, graduates into Mad Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the Bible of all wise guys in grade school. And Mad Magazine often had movie parodies or parodies, satires of Broadway shows, where they actually had satirical lyrics put to songs that existed. And so
Sure. So
I think there's always been, in my study of the work and then in my own execution of the work, mm-hmm. there's been this kind of marriage of art and music. And going, if I can indulge this further, when I got into high school, which was a great time for rock and roll, and that's why you have all these classic rock stations still clogging
sure.
up the airwaves. But a lot of the music from that time, from the Beatles to the Stones to David Bowie, whatever, anything that I had done or anything I had drawn from my school paper, my college paper, had usually a lyrical reference. Mm-hmm. So there's been, it's been a common thread in my work.
Well, you know, and with Chicago Jazz Magazine specifically, you know, since we're talking about Chicago Jazz Revealed here, you draw some very detailed cartoons. I mean, mm-hmm. very, very detailed. And with that Chicago flair, like, I almost liken it to you're drawing the cartoon. It's almost like you're writing an article inside of the cartoon because of all the details that you have. I mean, I remember seeing Hinda Hoffman, I think, is in one, and Spider mm-hmm. Saloff. And
right.
you're mentioning all these people. I mean, the background that you're going into and talking. Now, are you doing a lot of research on that stuff, or is that just coming flowing off the top of your head? And how do you even come up with the concept to do some of that stuff? Because sometimes I look at it before it goes to print. I'm like, wow,
it's either,
there's a lot of stuff here.
It's a stroke of genius or a cry for help. I'm not sure which. Going back to Mad Magazine, one of the cool things of those cartoons would be you'd look in the margins, and there was always some kind of other joke within the joke, and then the backgrounds of all the panels, there'd be all kinds of things going on, which is something I always did, only because when I was in high school, people would come up to me in the hall, kids would say, you know, hey, we look at this cartoon inside and out, they're finding all these little messages and things. And years later, I was in a store, mm-hmm. and someone was talking to me about the Jazz Magazine. And a lady came up to me and said, you know, I really like your cartoons. And then she was part of a little jazz listeners group. And she says, you know, we really like all those little details. It's like
yeah.
they pull out the magnifying glass and they get into it. And so, you know, it's something I've always put in the artwork. The challenge that you and I kind of created for ourselves when I met you at a jazz fest a long time ago, and for no one who doesn't know the story, which we used to talk about at the other show quite a bit, I was at a jazz fest, and I had seen Chicago Jazz Magazine, and I was happy to see it. I think that the city needed that, mm-hmm. that sort of publication, particularly the jazz community. So I went up to you and said, man, I love your publication. This thing's fantastic. It just needs one thing. And you said, what would that be? And I said, a cartoon. And you said, I'm looking for a cartoonist. And I said, well, you found one. And so we said, well, let's do this. And that was cool until you get to the point of, what are we going to do? You
know,
what
right,
are we gonna,
right.
How are we going to make this happen, you know? And I the first cartoon was a Christmas cartoon.
Is that what it was?
Easy
yeah.
enough. you know, you can always have a Santa Claus and some hip little elves packaging up CDs, and it wasn't really that good. And I had tried to draw in a way that was different than anything else I had done for all the different publications I had worked for. I wanted a different look, and it wasn't that good. And I had to go back to the tried and true, the mm-hmm. look that had been my look and was successful. Along the same lines, it was, why don't we just go with the crazy collage kind of thing where there's all these little jokes and, you know, you slip in a little bit of, you know, from all different kinds sure. of reference points. And I thought, you know, it's very work intensive. So I thought the feature would succeed if we were to alternate that sort of collage cartoon with a single panel joke. And, you know, and I know plenty of musicians, and I'll, you know, say, you know, do you have an interesting joke or a gag or something? And then they send you all the drummer jokes.
Right,
no,
of course,
no offense,
yeah.
Mike.
No, no, don't worry about it.
And that's pretty much what you get. But I wanted to look at this feature as something that we could put out there that the jazz fan could understand, and then also the readership that are musicians, a real jazz aficionados,
right. yep.
that they could get it too. So you want the feature to operate on a few different levels. So I know I'm making something very simple, like a comic strip or a cartoon. So I'm pretty complicated, but these
well,
are all
it
the
is complicated because
it.
when you look at what you're drawing, you're not just drawing like a Santa Claus and two elves with a couple of CDs. I mean, you're getting really detailed, and I mean, you're drawing things from individual. And the other thing that's cool is that you're drawing from Chicago musicians mm-hmm. for the most part. You know, like off of their CD covers and things. You're pulling mm-hmm. things, like things that it's almost like an inside joke to that musician because
right,
that musician's
right.
like, wow, how did this guy?
And that's all
how
totally
did this
intentional.
Guy get this information
certainly,
here?
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you know, that's it's Chicago Jazz Magazine,
right?
And so our focus has to remain, you know, that market, whether it's again the paying customers, the club owners, the performers, and so I thought it gave me an opportunity to put into print, and we only have so many pages in Chicago Jazz Magazine,
right?
And you can't get everybody in there, and there's so many deserving musicians out there. And so my idea was to try to work in names or their CD covers or whatever of people who might necessarily not get a story or might not get the CD review. I mean, we get how many CDs to
right.
review?
Yeah, like 40 a month.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, and there's only so many column sure. inches. And that's true of any publication these days. So a lot of, as far as your question about the material itself, yeah, a lot of this stuff I just know. It's kind of weird, mm-hmm. but I've been a big music fan.
Well, and you're detail-oriented, too, so that's why I think you're looking at stuff and you're sucking it, digesting it, you know, ingraining it more than, like, I would even be, because
yeah.
you're really, like, looking at the stuff and really, you know, remembering what it is, and that's why it probably just comes right off the top of your head when you start drawing. You get creative and you start doing it.
Well, yeah, it one thing leads to the other, you know, and that's why I don't ever worry about if we're going to fill the space, because it seems like you get one concept, one idea, and then, you know, one thing leads to the
sure.
next, to the next, and before you know it, there's not enough room. I mean, then you're editing. So,
well, you know, leading this in, before we talk about the art shows and stuff you have coming up, but you also did a CD. You drew for Chicago Sessions, and you did used your kind of moved in from doing the cartoon stuff in the magazine all of a sudden to a jazz CD for mm-hmm. Nick Ipers with Chicago Sessions and Sean Maxwell's CD.
Right, right.
Urban Vigilante.
Right.
They obviously called and hired you, but I mean, how did you get the concept to do that? Because it's kind of it's a very cool CD cover.
Yeah, it is, if I must say so myself.
Yeah, right.
It wasn't my idea, but it was a very cool concept. Just the title, Urban Vigilante, that had
right.
a certain bad, you know, thing connotation. And what Nick and I think it came from Sean, was his in the Maxwell home. I think comic books and the Marvel Comics mm. things are really a big deal for Sean and the kids. And he wanted that sort of look, that Marvel comic book look, which is something I can do and something I've done since I was reading Marvel Comics. Sure. So it was really an easy thing for me to create. I was right in step with them on it from the start. So that really came together pretty easily. And he just wanted a dark, foreboding, character, Sean, in this you know, long black leather coat, and, you know, holding his saxophone, and to look like a Marvel Comics cover. So that one was just, it just came together very easily.
Well, since we're talking about that, why don't we take a listen to a track from Urban Vigilante, and then we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about the upcoming art shows here. So this is Sean Maxwell's Urban Vigilante here on WDCB 90.9 FM and ChicagoJazz.com. All right, we're back here at Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers here live at Katarina's, 1920 West Irving Park Road here in Chicago. It's all right to clap. You can scream, you can clap, you can drink, and of course, the dance floor is always open.
Okay.
So we just heard a track from Urban Vigilante, and the name of that tune was Charlie Work. Mm-hmm. And we think it's probably Charlie Parker, but let's just say
let's just say he dedicated it to you. Yes, why not?
So you drew all the cover art for that, and I know you've been contacted by other people to do some different things, but I know that that's not your main stuff, and that gets a little time intensive. But I will tell you this, that the CD covers that I've seen that you've done, maybe it's just the one, I'm not sure. I thought you did
I did a couple others for some British blues rock guys.
Oh, okay.
You know, members.
You did some for the Yardbirds, didn't you?
Yeah, it was a friend of mine is the merchandising guy and the tour manager for the Yardbirds, and it's the band as it stands today. It's like a lot of the 60s and 70s bands. You have a couple of the original members and then a couple gunslingers.
Jimmy Page, Jeff Beck, Eric Clapton, they're all in there
still.
Yeah,
I wish they'd stop calling me. It's starting to get to be a problem. You know, Eric, I'm hungover. Leave me alone. Man, I'm serious.
They're nagging, too, aren't they?
Oh,
and they've got their English accent.
You know, Robert Plant sleeping in the yard. Right. And it's like, Jimmy, get this guy out of here.
Jeez, I'm trying to draw a Chicago Jazz Magazine cartoon.
Records and, oh, right. But no, those were cool things to do. I think they were primarily digital releases, but when they put them up like on CD Baby, it's good to have a
sure,
cover.
Sure.
And I was more than happy to do it. I mean, the Yardbirds were one of my favorite bands from the start. And I think if you mail order the disc, you get the disc with the cover.
Okay.
I don't actually know how that works. But those were two that I did for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And then I just did a little bit of work for Paula Bella. But I'm not sure how much of – I haven't seen the CD. So I don't know how much of what I did is in
made
the package.
I don't think
it's the cover, but I think it's in the package itself. Mm-hmm. But, the thing that the opportunity that Nick Ipers gave me was just incredible. And, again, it was right in my wheelhouse. It was Marvel Comics. And, I don't think everybody necessarily needs an album cover with a cartoon on it. I think it's good to once in a while. There's a famous.
But you can make a lot of money if everybody needed.
If
one
everybody
of those
needed it, but I'm pretty limited. They may all look like Urban Vigilante Part 5 and Part 6, and so there was the famous Robert Crumb, Janis Joplin cartoon cover. And there's a few others, but I think it's something that's best. Used in, in small doses.
Well, but you are taking your show on the road, literally, shall we say. So your cartoon.
Nice segue.
You like
nice
that, don't you? Yeah.
I like how you do the show. It sounds very good. Yeah. You've done very well without me. I'm not really happy about that either, but what I like about it is, maybe the people at home want to try this. Every time you say, Katarina, I take a shot. I drink a shot.
It's a whole other show.
I may not make it to the end of the show, but it sounds really good up until the point that I pass out.
Well, thank God you only listen to the DCB version, because if you go to the two-hour podcast,
they
might be looking for you a couple of days later somewhere.
But I'm in the yard next to Robert Plant.
Right, that'll be it.
Right.
That'll be the end of that. So getting back to your show on the road.
On the road.
See, I hit the greatest segue known to man in radio, and we got sidetracked. But that's all right.
That's okay.
I brought it right back in. So you've got four different shows running right now. Is it four, right?
Yeah, it's kind of amazing, isn't it?
It's pretty.
I'm kind of in disbelief.
I don't want to say it's incredible, but for an artist to have four shows at the same time, I think that's kind of rare, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very rare. I mean, all the other artists are telling me that. It's like, come on, man, leave something for us. I don't know. It's a lot of it's because of Chicago Jazz Magazine. That has afforded me a body of work that people like, and it's kind of timeless. I did a lot of political work, and I did 30 years of political work. And,
with Suburban Life Magazine and
Suburban Life newspapers, and then New City for a short time, and more recently with the AOL Patch, mm-hmm. which is like this news magazine online.
Yeah, yeah.
I did that for about a year. But to go back to that, the Suburban Life had newspapers in 75 different communities, and AOL Patch was all over northern Illinois, and I was pretty much in those different communities. So, and I like to say it's kind of like on a minor league level. I have never worked for the Tribune or the Sun-Times,
sure,
or anything,
sure.
but I've always been a pretty good AAA ball player, and so I've been out there a lot. And surprisingly to me, people recognize the work. They recognize the name to some degree. And so because of this, I've received these invitations to put the work on display in poster form.
Mm-hmm. And now, so you have four different ones, but why don't we talk about the first one, which is in Oak Lawn at Sip Appetizer
right.
Bar. And this is interesting because I believe this is the one where Catherine Whitney and Peter Lerner perform
right.
on Thursdays as well. So they've got your show up, right? It's just on
right,
display
right.
so people can see it seven
yeah.
days a week.
This was Catherine Whitney's concept, and she contacted me, and she had this month-long gig at Sip Appetizer Bar, which is a really nice little place on 95th, just west of Cicero.
4911 West 95th in Cicero.
West of Cicero Avenue in Oak Lawn.
Oh, it's in Oak Lawn.
It's in Oak Lawn.
Okay, I've got that wrong.
So she said, would I be interested? I have done a number of different exhibits through the years, and she knew of those. I knew Catherine for many years. I met her at the old jazz fair when they used to have the jazz fairs
sure, yeah.
in Chicago in January.
Blackstone Theater and all
fantastic
that.
Fantastic
yeah.
events, yeah. And so so she contacted me and asked if I was interested in bringing the work there. And all I had to really do was frame it and drop it off to the proprietor, a guy named Andy, a great guy, great cook, great host. And so he laid it out on the walls. And Catherine is there every Thursday in September, I think, by the time this is
there's
broadcast.
There'll be one more.
There'll be one more.
But she told me, we talked at the Jazz Fest a couple of weeks ago, and she said that she thought that it might get extended because people were coming out. So hopefully everyone listening here heads out to the Sip Appetizer Bar in Oak Lawn and checks it out so that they can continue having a gig
right,
along
right.
with your artwork.
Yeah, cool. And this one is all Chicago Jazz Magazine stuff. So it's kind of, I don't know how long we've, I think the magazine has been
13th
around.
13th year.
13th years, and I think I've been around for
75 years?
Oh
you mean in the magazine.
Here.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
That's all right. I've been around for most of it. So there's
right.
so suddenly, even though it comes out every other month, before you know it, you got a lot of jazz cartoons.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And you can fill a wall or two. So that's what we're doing there.
Well, and you have some really cool ones because I've been to some of the exhibits. And some of the ones that you put up, I forget that you because you don't remember all the years now. And there's some really hip ones. So having them blown up in poster form, it's a lot cooler to see that stuff, quadruple the size than what it is in the magazine, because then you can really see those details and stuff.
Exactly.
So now you've got also, to make all of the artists in the listening area angry, you have three more
yeah.
gigs happening here. One at Oak Park at the Harrison Works Gallery.
Right.
And that's more of a baseball and CJM?
The Harrison Works is a small working gallery on a strip of galleries in Harrison Street, on Harrison Street in Oak Park. In fact, they just recently had a arts festival there. So there's a number of venues for any artist to display or sell mm-hmm. their work. And so I've done a few things in Oak Park before. And as with Oak Lawn, I was the Oak Park AOL Patch cartoonist.
Oh, okay.
So
so they knew you, obviously.
They knew me. And when the way I work now is a little bit different than it was when I started out, before you'd get assignments from your editor. Now, they pretty much leave me, when I work in that manner, mm-hmm. to my own devices to draw whatever I want to draw. And as a result, I've done a lot of baseball stuff.
Sure.
And so I have this backlog or this catalog of baseball cartoons. And this was the theme of the show. I had plenty of stuff for her, and I think there's maybe 15 or 16 baseball images, including one that ran in Chicago Jazz.
And all of this is open to the public, so it's free. Yep. You can just walk right in. Aurora Public Art Commission has you there until November 22nd.
Yeah, the Aurora Public Art Commission show is a really interesting show in that it's mostly the work of young artists in the comic book realm. And it's most of them are for Rotten Apple Comics. I'm not familiar with the comic books, but I've certainly seen the work of these artists at the opening.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tremendous stuff, and
yeah.
It's really an honor to be alongside these young artists who are, you know, kind of practicing the newer, hipper approach to cartooning. So within this show as well as some Chicago Jazz stuff, and then mixed in some old Suburban Life stuff.
And then you've got one more, Geneva History. You got more gigs than me, man. Geneva History Center, you're there until November 2nd. Start with a sketch.
Yeah, start with a sketch is an interesting concept. They wanted to find in Geneva, they wanted to find artists that had a connection to Geneva.
Mm-hmm.
And my tenuous connection was that I was AOL, Patch Geneva cartoonist, and I had also worked for one of their neighborhood papers in the 90s, and so there's 12 artists involved, all of them who have some sort of connection to Geneva, but it's also to show the process of each artist. So you see sketches, you see proof sheets, you see, you know, and then you see the final art.
Okay.
And there's a tremendous storybook artist. Dick Tracy, creator Chester Gould, is in it, and then there's me. there's about 10 others, and they're all really good, and it's a really neat show. It's kind of like a maze, you know. You come in and you walk around from artist to artist, and you mm-hmm. see everything, and it's really a great, great presentation.
So that's the Geneva History Center. Of course, all of this will be on ChicagoJazz.com on the podcast page, with information so they can get all the details and stuff. All right, so one last thing for you. We want to end with a tune. So now it's going to be your choice. What tune should we end the segment with Charlie Krebs here on Chicago Jazz Revealed? What, you know, of course I've got to be able to get the tune, so you say.
Well,
I know
kind
you
of
told me
this
about.
On me.
Well, you told me about.
No, that's all right.
You used to talk about how you would put some Delmark release on. That was just like wild.
I'd say if when you asked about different jazz influence and stuff, and where I really learned most of everything I know about jazz was taking the graduate program at the Jazz Showcase when I was at the Blackstone
sure,
Hotel.
Yeah.
And I was just the right age to and I worked right down the street back then to get there, and I saw guys that you couldn't believe you were seeing. You know, and big names, and anyone listening knows who those names
right.
are without us going down the list. But and the sad thing is, just, you know, maybe 20 years later, so many of them are gone. And one of the great nights I had there anyone who went there knew you could hang out in the lobby.
Right.
You couldn't smoke at any still. Well, you can't smoke any place
right.
now. But back then, Joe had the only non-smoking room in the city of Chicago.
Right.
So everybody would end up out in the lobby, and I spent a great evening with three guys at the Jazz Showcase, Monty Alexander, Ray Brown, and Herb Ellis. And I bought their CD, and I would like you to end this show with their version of Meet the Flintstones.
Okay, you got it. Meet the Flintstones here on Chicago Jazz Reveal. Thanks for coming in, Charlie.
Thank you, Mike.
And,
good to see you.
We will have you back on, I'm sure, in the coming months, because we're talking about doing some other segments and things.
Cool.
And assuming you are still coherent after I say Katarina's.
Drink up,
live
everyone.
Live at Katarina's.
I think you got a good marketing thing with this.
All right, let's take a listen to, you naming the tune again? Oh, the Flintstones.
It's Meet the Flintstones.
You might remember
it's a
that.
Cartoon. See, that's what we're doing here. It's a cartoon thing.
Back here at Chicago Jazz Reveal, WDCB 90.